Thanks, Duncan. It's now time for backyard archaeology. And as part of my jet-setting archaeologist lifestyle, I spent last month in the backyards of Iceland. While there, I bumped into Dawn Elise Mooney, who explained why Icelandic architecture isn't quite the same as everywhere else.
Well, you're here because Iceland is one of the most exciting places for archaeology in the world at the moment. It's one of the few places that was colonised in historical time, but from a pristine environment, and so there's a lot of both environmental and cultural aspects of the archaeology in the country that are very interesting to study.
So basically we're talking about Vikings, aren't we?
We are, yes.
So, can you just tell me a bit about this wonderful city, Reykjavik, that you've shown me around? Because you're now a local and you're going to be here for several more months. Can you tell me a bit about the history of this place?
Well, Reykjavik has been settled since the Vikings first came to Iceland in the 8th century. There is a house found in Adalstræti, which is in the centre of town, that was a longhouse, a hall, Viking hall, that was dates right back to the very earliest settlement of Iceland. But Iceland and Reykjavik in general, it has this very mixed history of both historical sources and archaeological evidence. And Reykjavik is very important because it's supposed to be the place settled by Ingólfur Arnarson, who was the first settler of Iceland, supposedly. And that's one of the reasons why Reykjavik is the capital city and why people have congregated here and why this is so important, because this was the first place that was a port and a just good place to settle for the Vikings.
So we've got these wonderful sagas, which some of us might be familiar with, and, you know, some of us might be familiar with the indirect relation to such popular films like Lord of the Rings and what have you. And let's be honest, Dawn, most of the houses here date to around sort of the 18th century. Where's the older buildings?
Well, the older buildings, there aren't too many of them because Reykjavik wasn't really colonised properly until, say, didn't become a city, I should say, until maybe 100 years ago, even less. But the oldest buildings are buried beneath the current city. So you have quite interesting archaeology. Whenever there is a house being remodeled or renovated, they can just lift off the house. This is what they did at Adalstræti, and they find underneath Viking Age colonisation, which is, yeah, very exciting just to see this whole older city and older settlement developing underneath the modern buildings of Reykjavik.
Well, the museum for Adalstræti, this wonderful hall, is fantastic. And outside, you still have an area which has been left by the council, by the archaeologists, which needs further excavation. And it's just there by the side of the road with grass growing over it. And we know what lies beneath. This is more exciting Viking hall-type archaeology. Dawn, can you tell me a bit about why you're here and why this wonderful city in Reykjavik, your backyard, why this interests you, or more broadly, the Iceland in general?
Well, as I said at the start, Iceland is very interesting from the point of view of environmental archaeology, in that it was colonised from a pristine environment during historical time, so you compare historical records with environmental proxies from archaeological sites. I'm personally working on wooden artefacts and charcoal from archaeological sites, and trying to distinguish how wood use in Iceland has changed over time.
So, in all of our gardens, backyards, we have a barbecue, there's some charcoal left over, or if we're back in the Viking times, a house burns down, there's some charcoal left over. We find it today. What do you do with it?
Well, from the scientific point of view, I break it into three sections. That would be the transverse section, which is across the growth rings, the radial section across the radius, as the name would suggest, and the tangential section, which is on a tangent to the growth rings. And if you look at them under very high magnification, up to, say, 200 times, you can see different features in the wood. And every species of wood grows very slightly differently. And it's the combination of these features that can tell you, if you have the practice and the right books, what kind of species of wood you have. And therefore, in a place like Iceland, you can tell where it has come from, which is very interesting for us.
Fantastic. So you identify the wood, not just from charcoal, but like you said, wooden artefacts. Can you describe some of these artefacts that you've been looking at and where they come from?
Well, recently I've been studying the artefacts from the site you mentioned, actually, that's still open in the centre of Reykjavik. And this is a Viking Age site, but it's very interesting because when the Vikings arrived, Iceland was pretty much wooded. It was maybe 40% covered in woodland, and it's gone down to 1% today. So there's been a huge decline. And that's often related to the activities of the Vikings. So I'm interested in finding out how they used different types of wood and how they coped with this declining amount of wood. So we can find that out from where artifacts come from, whether they're made of local wood, which is all birch and willow, driftwood, which is mostly conifer species, or imported wood, which is can be anything, really, anything you like, from Mediterranean woods to New World species. But the artifacts from Althingisreitirn are quite interesting because we're finding a mixture of driftwood, which is mostly used for construction materials, and birchwood, which is used for smaller artifacts like handles for knives. And then a lot of the barrels and the stave-built vessels that we find are actually made of oak. So they've been imported specifically, probably filled with goods, say grain or other kinds of food stocks. And they've been brought in just as they are and reused. And you can see that with, they've had new stoppers made of pine or birch that have been made in Iceland. But there's no sort of, there's no barrel making, no coopering going on here. It's all being brought in. And you can see this real clear distinction with the different sets of artifacts. And it's very interesting to see how they follow these clear patterns.
That's really exciting. So basically, we've got lots of wood species from Iceland, from abroad, and driftwood you mentioned. So basically they are collecting wood that's been washed ashore on the beaches, on the black sand and what have you. And what's fascinating is, as you've described to us, is that the wood is being used for particular objects, buildings or what have you. It's a selective process. They are actually using all these trends and themes. That's really exciting. So next time I go into my garden and look at my willow or birch tree or there's a bonfire and I look at it and take it for granted, I know that maybe in a few hundred years' time, somebody else like you, Dawn, will be looking at the wood and trying to identify it and make sense of it all. And if it's not too much to ask, I know you've been a keen student and learner of the language. Would you mind just finishing off this podcast with a bit of the beautiful sounding Icelandic tongue for us?
Já, ekkert mál, hún tafir kærlega og verði sætl og blessaður.
That was Dawn Elise Mooney saying, I'm not quite sure what. But that's it for Naked Archaeology this month. And just a reminder to take part in our survey. Naked Archaeology is still a bit of a young gun, but the Naked Scientists have been going for 10 years now. So we're running a survey to find out who's listening to us, why you're listening to us, and we'd like to know if there's anything we can improve. And to celebrate, you have a chance to win £10 worth of Amazon gift vouchers, or equivalent currency. So to take part, just complete the survey, which is at thenakedscientists.com/survey.
Laying the artifacts bare. Naked Archaeology.